What is going on, everybody? My name is Larry Francis, but you know me better on Instagram as A Wrestling Historian. And today on To Be Determined, I have my guest with me, the great Rod Julius City. Mr. City, how you doing, sir?
Oh, delightful. I assume you're a Lawrence?
I am not, actually.
Oh, you're just straight Larry?
Just straight Larry.
As a baby you were Larry?
Yes, sir.
Your birth certificate says fucking Larry?
Yep.
That's amazing. And it says a lot about, I don't know what it is, but it says a lot about your parents.
What does it say?
Well, I don't know. To bypass Lawrence and go straight for the Larry nickname, like, because it is essentially a nickname, but now you have it as a name.
Yes.
That's like naming a baby Bill instead of William. You like to leave it open for some babies to be able to be called William, should they become a lawyer or something. Or, you know, if they're in something fun like an ice cream man, you can call them Bill or Billy. Here, you're Larry. I think that determines a little more of informal nature when speaking to you.
There you go. I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah, because if I had met you first, and you're like, this is To Be Determined with Lawrence Francis, I'd feel like I'd have to earn the Larry. You know, I'd have to do some legwork there, but we're already here.
If it was Lawrence, oh man, just wouldn't work with that intro.
To be fair, though, Larry of Arabia would be a horrible movie title.
Yes, yes it would.
Larry Olivier, you wouldn't say Larry Olivier. It would be terrible.
Right.
Or Lawrence Curly and Moe. You know, if you're a stooge, you gotta be a Larry.
Oh man.
The full name of Shemp. What is Shemp? Is that a nickname for anything? I don't know. He was underrated. This whole podcast is about the Three Stooges, correct?
It could be.
Good, because I think Shemp is underrated. You all need to go back and lower your commercial adulation of Curly and realize Shemp, the episodes with Shemp are very, very strong.
Were you a Three Stooges fan growing up?
Yes. More so Abbott and Costello, and more so Laurel and Hardy. I think they're the superior act, although I do enjoy and respect the Three Stooges.
For all the listeners out there who aren't familiar with you, could you give them an abridged version of your life story?
I was trained in the 60s to wrestle by Jerry Lewis in the Catskill Mountains. He did a lot of chain wrestling with me, and he was smoking a cigarette the whole time. I've since decided to carry on the legacy of him and B. Arthur, who, you know, speaks to me in very mysterious ways, and to really do as many idiotic things as possible, and in wrestling, make it my goal to put the entertainment back in sports entertainment. Because, like, it's very boring. I don't know if you've ever seen a wrestling show, but it's incredibly boring. You know, men sweating and yelling, we got it already.
Do you have a favorite particular boring match that sticks out to you?
I have anything where people are very serious. You know. Oh my, yes, it's very... Wrestling is so inherently, conceptually ridiculous that I just love when wrestlers fool themselves. And they go, you know, I really took that. He really hit me in the face and I was tough enough to come back. And I say, you know, it's fake. It would have been better if you pretended to. And then people could admire your skill instead of your ignorant toughness, which any brute can get hit in the face and keep going. It's not that hard. You know? Give me a little art, my friend.
So when you were a wee lad, what got you to become a professional wrestler?
I don't know. I don't remember not wanting to do it. It was always something I enjoyed and wanted to do. And of course, it was too late for me to join the Three Stooges. They were all dead by that point. I was left with Curly Joe, who was like the shittiest replacement Stooge. So that was a horrible time for me as a child. And I said, if I can't be a Stooge or I can't be a Muppet, I would have loved to be a Muppet. I had to be a wrestler. It was the only choice I had.
As soon as you came out of your mother's womb, right then and there, you wanted to become a professional wrestler?
Yeah, it was always around, and it was a thing. It was like, well, why wouldn't you, you know? Also, though, I feel like every boy, young boy, wants to be a wrestler, the same way they want to be a Power Ranger or a fire truck. I was just dumb enough to continue to want to as I got older.
Would it be fair to say that Bea Arthur is what got you in the ring?
No, she didn't get me in the ring. She made me realize, she got me into life, you know? She got me into realizing that I have to hold my head high and carry myself with the dignity that only I have, and that I have to raise all tides in the water, especially when the other boats are very dull and basic and drab.
So what was your first experience getting inside the square circle?
Well, as I said, I was trained in the Catskill Mountains with Jerry Lewis. And the reason he did that, training in the mountains, first of all, the higher up is different altitude. Secondly, as I mentioned, he always smoked a cigarette. So you think the altitude is rough, plus the secondhand smoke while trying to run around and stuff, it primed my lungs for the rigors of the ring.
What was the most important thing Jerry Lewis taught you?
Oh, my. You know, just to be relaxed. I have very limp wrists. That was something he ingrained in me early on, because sometimes these wrestlers get too tense, too jacked up, and next thing you know, they're popping quads and things of that nature. But if you stay loose and flexible, it makes your body and your mind more adaptable to what you're about to encounter.
So the reason I wanted to get you on my show is we first met at the House of Hardcore in Philadelphia. That was my first exposure of you, and I didn't really know who you were, but you were so entertaining that night. I'm like, I gotta get to know this guy better.
Yeah, that was a fun, odd show. I teamed with David Arquette. Unfortunately, we continued to be undefeated. When we wrestled Robbie E. and Tyrus. And again, a bizarrely winning effort. And then I gave David the what for, and I hit him from behind, so I was sick of his shit after a while. It's enough of this Arquette fella. And then, the Enter Sandman hit, and lo and behold, the title is literal, because the Sandman did enter after 8 minutes of drinking and smoking and parading around with bloated, sweaty fans, and then he struck me. You know, it'd be nice in the lyrics of Enter Sandman, in addition to the Sandman entering, they could also mention he's going to hit you with a stick. I was not made aware. And then Bully Ray ran out and hit the Sandman and put David through a table. So, all in all, it was both a good and bad night for me. And then we met. So, I guess it was a net positive evening.
So, you've told me this story, but for my listeners, could you tell them the story of how you and David Arquette became a tag team?
Well, I have the collection of timeline tweets collected in a moment at the top of my Twitter page for anyone who's interested in the ultimate specifics. But he started following me on Twitter. He kept responding to all my tweets. It was very annoying, so I called him out. One thing led to another. Last summer, we wrestled each other. It was his first match back in Hollywood. I was the first man to pin him. Thank God. Certainly not the last. And, you know, he was so impressed by, I guess, my oeuvre as a performer. He needed some help. He was challenged to a tag team match. He needed a partner. And we struck a deal where if I agreed to team with him, he would get me an appearance on a talk show. And I'm not a fool. You know, I think I'd be a good guest on Dick Cavett or even, you know, Maury Povich, what have you. So I agreed to team with him, and now we've been teaming and teaming all over the place. We continue to team, and so far I haven't gone on one talk show. Nothing. Nothing at all. Not a Ricky Lake. Not a Jenny Jones. Nothing. So, I've really made the deal with the devil, and the devil's name is David Arquette.
Were you impressed by David Arquette's transition from actor to pro wrestler?
Absolutely not. It was bumbling, it was awkward, it was very dangerous for all parties involved. There's about 1,000 other actors I'd like to deal with in wrestling before him. Oliver Platt is a co-star, I'd love to wrestle him. Alfred Molina looks like he has very thick hands. I think he'd be a good wrestler too. And the last person I want in the ring is David Arquette. However, this is the hand we've been dealt.
Do you have a favorite film from the Arquette cinematic lineup?
Not his. I like his family much, much more than I like him. I'm not a fan of his work, nor am I that familiar. I see a trailer or a poster and I go, that's a film I don't want to see. But his sisters are fantastic actresses, Rosanna and Patricia. And his dearly departed sister, Alexis Arquette, was great in Pulp Fiction, was great in The Wedding Singer. But his father was an actor and was in a bunch of Christopher Guest films, which I loved, and he was a character actor. His grandfather was a well-noted comedian called Charlie Weaver, who I was very familiar with before this. He was on Hollywood Squares. And his great-grandparents were in vaudeville doing Jewish theater. So there's a bunch of generations of Arquettes that I like, and Arquette individuals, but certainly not the one with the first name David.
When you turned on him after that aforementioned tag team match with Robbie E and Tyrus, did you do that because he made the decision to be in Scream 4?
That he made the decision to be an actor at all, to be honest with you. I think all the Scream movies are equally bad. They're not my bag at all. Mainly because he's in them. If it was another goofy, funny actor who can also do serious stuff, it was perhaps... if he was replaced by Steven Weber, I'd say those are great films. But for his appearance, I must say I'm not that much of a fan.
Speaking of acting, I understand you do some when you're not in the ring.
I do. I do various things. I was on a TV show called Splat-A-Lot, which is, for some inexplicable reason, in syndication in over 100 countries. I've been in my fair share of movies, but I have a web series with the CBC, and for you American people, that stands for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. And it's called The Cynical Crafter, and I make wonderful crafts that don't always have the best ending. And every Sunday morning at 9:30 in the morning, I make coffee in my underwear on Facebook Live. And no matter what demographic you are, whether you're a young fella, whether you're an old gal, or whether you're very middle of the road, I think I have some piece of content for you to enjoy.
What inspired you to make coffee every morning in this unique manner?
Well, like most things in my life, it started as a joke. Because everyone's streaming or going live and all they shit. And I made a joke about, I'm going to make coffee in my underwear and stream it live. And then Tommy Dreamer, to call back to House of Hardcore, messaged me and said, you might as well. Everyone else is doing it. And I thought, well, let's. So I did my first stream last February. So February of last year, 2018. And now I've been doing it for more than a year. What is it, May? So I think we're in like 60, 70 episodes, which is crazy. People enjoy it. We've had numerous guests. Unfortunately, David has been on 3 times. Victoria, Tommy Dreamer, and who did we just have? Oh, Pepper Parks and Allie, who's in All Elite Wrestling. So far, so good. Onward and upward.
What's your coffee flavor of choice?
I am often of the belief that if it's very good coffee, it does not need to be flavored. Similarly, I don't like a lot on my pizza. If it's good, I don't need shit on it. However, I like the darker roasts. Something very dark, bold, Italian. I enjoy it, but it's really all how you make it. Even the best coffee will be shit if you put it in, you know, a horrible diner percolator and drink it out of a foam cup. I'm a big proponent of the French press. Everyone knows I like a French press. But I've also been dabbling with the pour over to a pretty impressive result.
Are you a Tim Hortons fan?
Absolutely not. That's brown water. And their uniforms suck, too. I've had nothing but horrible experiences there, no matter what. They're terrible cups. I love the Starbucks cups. They're not the best coffee. I mean, the best coffee is one you can really craft yourself and make at home. And I understand, you know, anything that's mass-produced is not going to be, you know, as good. But I enjoy chewing on the Starbucks cups. I enjoy holding them. I enjoy scratching my nails on them and chewing them with my teeth. But the Tim Hortons cups are just dreadful. And those lids, oh my God, I spill it everywhere. Terrible. Terrible design.
What acting role have you enjoyed doing the most so far?
Oh, what is my favorite role? That is a fine question. I enjoy doing The Cynical Crafter on CBC because I also have a hand in seeing it through from beginning to end, and I enjoy being part of the process from the beginning. So I'm happy that I can carry them through to the appropriate level that satisfies me. It would be, unfortunately, we're stupid enough to not give The Cynical Crafter a name idea, so now people who are Cynical Crafter, which is a really dumb idea on my part.
So where did the name RJ City come from?
Where did it come from? Well, RJ stands for Raul Julia, another actor that's made life. And one man or one place, a metropolis of entertainment. So that's certainly where it comes from.
If I remember correctly, Seattle's your favorite city?
I enjoy Seattle. I'm a big fan of Frasier, certainly. So I like to go there and I like to listen to people. But there's other lovely cities. Detroit isn't so bad. Baltimore is nice. It's on the water. And of course, Toronto, which I like to, you know, hob and nob, and I do many comedy shows there. I also need to go to Portland. They seem like coffee snobs that are on my level. So I have a few more I need to knock off the list before I can make a final decision.
Did you do stand-up comedy before acting, or acting and then stand-up comedy?
Well, I did, like, acting and improv in elementary school, and then in high school, and that's when I kind of started doing stand-up, so acting a little before, but the common thread through all of my work, wrestling, acting, stand-up, or otherwise, has been that it's just incredibly stupid, but it's something I pride myself on.
Well, one of my favorite aspects is your Twitter account, because every day I get on Twitter and I'm ready to see what the newest tweet is from RJ City, and almost every time you have me rolling. So I gotta know, how'd you get so good at making these funny tweets?
I think the joke is that there is no joke. I simply express myself with zero filter, although I hate that term, and people who say shit like that, and they say, oh, I pull no punches and tell it like it is, are usually the people who are the most full of shit. But I realized that I should just, I have these thoughts. I always have these thoughts. So Twitter was luckily the vehicle that finally came along for me to express myself. Otherwise, I got to say this shit to somebody I'm sitting next to on the subway. And they look at me like, oh, please, I'm trying to read here. Do you mind? So happily, the technology came up to meet me.
Another interesting thing I found out about you is you were blocked by the current President of the United States, Donald Trump. How'd you pull that off?
Well, I was tweeting him, because, you know, he's tweeting. He obviously has, I guess you could call them thoughts. And he would tweet stuff, and I would respond to it, and I realized that because I'm verified, my response would stick to the top of his responses. And people would see it, so it was a great, you know, his tweet would be a setup, and mine would be the punchline, which is amazing, because he's great at setting up punchlines. And one day, he tweeted something about what he thought of CNN and MSNBC or whatever, and I replied with, what about WKRP in Cincinnati? And then, which, you know, I thought it was funny. And then the next thing you know, a moth! And I was so shocked and, like, terrified, because you're like, this is the government. Did I do something illegal? Am I going to be arrested? I don't know how this shit works. And then immediately after that, I was contacted. It was in the midst of him blocking, like, hundreds of people all at the same time. And they were either comedians or artists or journalists and commentators and analysts who all spoke out against him. And I was... My friend, Mike Dennison, who's known for his B. Arthur illustrations, added me into this group because we were all blocked at the same time. And it was this secret society of cool, smart, funny people, which was nice. And I guess Trump has a problem with them. And then New York Magazine contacted me and got a quote. And I was in between, my quote was in between Rosie O'Donnell and Stephen King, who were also blocked. So I think that's fairly good company for me to be in.
And as of this very moment, you're still blocked by the president?
Indeed I am. My understanding is that that he was sued because it has something to do with politicians can't deny the public access to their information and public statements. And I believe what the lawsuit determined was that he can't block any more people. But it didn't say anything about overturning the ones that he had already blocked. However, he's got much more pressing issues, as do we. So I'll let it slide. And also, the best part is I can just go to Google and type in Trump Twitter, and I'll get, like, his latest tweets. So he can blow it out his ass, obviously. And he can't do anything, so he already blocked me. You know what I mean? We're here now, so I can say what I want. I can speak my mind. Also, Vicki Lawrence does not answer any of my tweets. She hasn't blocked me, but she just doesn't respond. And I'd like to speak to her and see what's up, what the deal is, what I did wrong.
Speaking of politics, how do you feel about your prime minister?
How do I feel about him? I guess I feel about him like almost every politician. Like, he's okay. He could be better. They all could be better. The political arena is just, like, I guess, faulty by design. And it's hard. There's nowhere you feel like you can really turn and this person, but maybe that's a good thing. Just as critical of the people you like as the people you like them personally. He's done some good things, and he's done some shitty things. So, he's a handsome fella. I'm a handsome fella. I'm coached by on your good looks, as have I. But at some point, you get older and uglier, and you have to really get some work done.
In your opinion, what's the shittiest thing he's done so far?
He also speaks weird. He speaks very properly, where it's like it almost devolves into a British accent. So I would say first, sort out your accent, and then we can go from there.
I like to go to Canada often, and one of the biggest things I've learned was the differences in our governmental systems. In America, in Congress, our elected officials will take turns on the podium giving speeches on various subjects, while in Canada, in your parliament, one political party will say what they got to say, the other will respond, and then they'll get up like a sports team going rah, rah, rah.
Oh, I know, but you also, that like pales in comparison to the night. It's like you're, honestly, it's like WrestleMania for politics, and these people are here, and they're like, we're cheering no matter what. But you can't boo. If you boo, the guy bangs the hammer, and then it's hilariously stupid. And it also makes you realize, like, people just really want to cheer about shit. You can go to Parliament, and you can hear old men at a wrestling show telling you people just want to cheer. You know? One day a week to just cheer and let it all out, and then get on with business.
Do you cry in a pillow whenever you're around David Arquette?
No, I bang my head against the wall. The crying in the pillow I leave for my more private moment.
Oh, sorry. It's like I'm trying to do this interview with you, but you're so funny. It's really hard for me to maintain my composure.
That's very sweet of you. Stay focused. Stay the course.
Right. Just give me a moment.
We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. We built this city.
I totally get why you became a stand-up comedian, because, you know, you could just say whatever, and somehow, I don't know if it's your delivery or the way you look at the camera, I don't know, you just it just make people laugh.
Well, I have very trivial grievances, and I think that just resonates with people.
For your next wrestling match, have you thought about coming down the aisle wearing the Splat-A-Lot outfit?
Oh, it's been locked up for a number of years in a bin, and we could not get access to it, even though we tried. It was something to do with the show is part owned by BBC, and they had that kind of stuff during on lockdown. But we just did a web series because they're tearing down the Splat-A-Lot Castle, so we did like a retrospective as we watched them knock it down. And in the bin, my outfit was there just as I had put it away like 8 years ago. And it was unwashed. It still fit, which is nice for my concept of age and death. I felt good about myself. And after having it on again, I was like good to just not wear it again. It was fairly uncomfortable to stand and talk in. Yet, I'm happy with my performance.
Have you thought about getting a newer replica of it?
It would be very hard. It's an odd mix of, like, motocross stuff and, like, hockey pads and then the gold chest plate. Personally, I feel like I look better with less clothing on, so I try to take the lower maintenance route.
When you do acting, do you focus on comedy roles or do you look at other genres?
I guess I'm drawn to comedy roles. I've been in non-comedy stuff, but I'm such a inherently idiotic person that I perhaps lend myself to comedic roles. But perhaps as I get more bitter, as I get older, as I face more disappointments in my life, I'll have more depth to pull from for more dramatic roles.
You mentioned Jerry Lewis earlier. Who else influenced you for your comedy routine?
Oh my, well, I love Martin Short because he loved Jerry Lewis, so that's a wonderful lineage we have going on there. I mentioned Laurel and Hardy. I loved Laurel and Hardy. Who else inspired me? Phil Hartman, Jan Hooks, who is just delightful and wonderful. And currently, I'm a larger fan of James Adomian. He does the wonderful impression of Bernie Sanders and Jesse Ventura, and if you haven't heard it, you need to look it up because it is flawless. People like that, people like, oh my God, Chris Elliott. I love Chris Elliott, and anything SCTV. Anything I do at CBC is just a small attempt to try to hang out with Eugene Levy. I just want to know how he smells. I assume it's good, but I want to know the specifics.
You know, one of my favorite surprises was finding out Jim Carrey was Canadian.
That was a surprise? You were very surprised?
Yes, I did not expect that.
Oh, I see. My issue with him currently is that he was the wacky guy, and then he was doing all the adult Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, that kind of deal. And now he's in the Sonic movie and being all wacky again. So, you know, pick a lane, Jim, and stick to it. That's what I say.
What's your favorite comedy movie?
Oh, well, traditional comedy, like a straight comedy, I would have to say is The Three Amigos. It's funnier every time I watch it, and I end up laughing at almost every line. If we're going to be a little untraditional and consider a broader concept of comedy, I would have to say The King of Comedy. If you haven't seen it, it was directed by Martin Scorsese. It has Robert De Niro, Jerry Lewis, obviously, and Sandra Bernhardt, who's amazing in it. And it's disturbing and tense and uncomfortable, but also very funny. So those would be my two picks.
From what I remember, you had a little stint in TNA. How'd that come about?
How did that come about? Well, they contacted me. As people often do. Me and Scott DeMore. Scott was managing me at Destiny Wrestling before this, so he was very familiar with my oeuvre, and we had a lot of fun being bumbling fools together. And then he ended up getting, in control of TNA. Well, I can't call it TNA. I like calling it TNA. Of Impact. Let me restate. And then Scott ended up, heading up the newer Impact operation and then brought me aboard for some idiocy. He handed me a mic and no script, which was obviously, you know, a mistake.
How was your experience there?
Well, anytime anyone hands me a microphone and no script, I respect them and feel sorry for them. It's a good experience. I liked the team there. It was very nice. Sanjay was there at the time. Jimmy Jacobs I know well. And they're familiar with me, so I think that helped. So I had a rollicking good time. Although there should be more vegetables at their catering. The catering was great. I think it was a little low on the greens. So if we could add some kale or perhaps some cucumbers, which are very refreshing after a match. If I had to put one item into the impact suggestion box, it would be that.
Well, now that Impact got bought out by Anthem and they're relocating everything to Toronto, are we going to see more RJ City?
I don't know. You'll see me whether I'm doing stuff with Impact or not. I can guarantee you that. I may be outside the box of any wrestling right now, just because I enjoy doing the dumbest things possible. I'm going to go wherever the vegetables are. That's all I'll say.
What do you like the most about being a professional wrestler?
Oh, God. I've never been asked that question before. Maybe I have a very short list. What do I like the most? I like that you can go out with this little clothing on, and it's very like, you know, here I am. I have nothing to really hide behind other than a fake name and a spray tan and, you know, lights. But I like the literal, for me, the literal bareness of it, going, well, this is just me, and I'm going to get hit. I hope someone enjoys it. I enjoy the fact that it's so stupid, yet we can present it in a way that makes people get legitimately invested in it.
What's your favorite match so far?
You know, I would probably, looking back, have to say the one from Hollywood last summer with me versus David Arquette, only because I gave him a black eye with Knee Arthur, and if anyone doubted the validity of that as a finishing move, you know, B really came from beyond the grave and helped me with that one. You know, pow, right in the kisser. And in many ways, God did get David for that.
When are you guys going to make Ready to Rumble 2?
Oh, my. Well, he's doing a documentary now about his return to wrestling, and he's often joked that that will be the unofficial sequel to Ready to Rumble. However, it has no Scott Kahn, has no Oliver Platt, has no Martin Landau, so I don't know how you can say that. Fun fact, Jimmy the King's parents in Ready to Rumble were played by David's actual father, Louis Arquette, and Kathleen Freeman, who was like Jerry Lewis's right-hand gal for many, many movies. So, unless we can have them in the film, I don't want any part of it.
You know, it's another fun fact about that movie that blows my mind.
What?
John Cena was in it.
Yes, I know. He's a blurry extra in the gym. Isn't that very bizarre? There's so many good wrestlers in it, though. Like Kurt Hennig and Bam Bam Bigelow and Randy Savage. And also, Canyon was Jimmy the King's stunt double. And Shane Helms was, of course, David Arquette. And if you've ever seen David wrestle, you know why he desperately needed a stunt double.
Is that why he wanted you to be his tag team partner?
I guess. He was trying to swindle me into taking the brunt of the abuse. Quite a typical Hollywood Ponzi scheme by David Arquette.
Now, growing up, were you more of a WWF fan or WCW?
I think being Canadian, you ended up being more of a WWF fan because we didn't have as much access to WCW. I remember it being like the Power Hour was on TSN, which was just like an hour of Big Josh squash matches. So that didn't really whet my appetite that much until like the Monday Night War started. But they used to do like, because it wasn't fun. It was hard. Like, Canadian cable sucks. It's really shitty. I remember them playing, like, Raw. They would play on, like, whatever, Monday night. And then, like, Tuesday afternoon, they would play Nitro. So, like, cable wise, WCW always got the shaft, even though, you know, it certainly ended up being fun.
Do you recall a particular match that inspired you to pursue this adventure in the ring?
One of my favorite matches is Rick Rude and Roddy Piper in a steel cage from Madison Square Garden. It's got to be on the network, under Piper's stuff. I had it on VHS as a kid, and it was just like, it was the craziest match. It was funny and stupid, but then rough and serious and whatever. I was a big Piper fan, and I ended up being in a pilot with him and a movie with him, which was very serendipitous and nice. So my heart will go to that match always.
Wow, I didn't know that. What movie was that?
It's called The Masked Saint. I think it's on either both Netflixes or just the Canadian Netflix. I can't remember. And they actually just showed it at the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, somebody told me. It's about the real story of a guy who was a pastor and also a wrestler. When it was a weird-ass story. And I played a wrestler, and Roddy was the shitbag promoter. So we enjoyed having an unscripted argument in our scene. And the pilot we were in was called Body Slam. And I think if you look it up, it's the whole thing is just on YouTube. And also in it is Bret Hart and Stephen McHattie, who is Elaine's and Joe DiVola's psychiatrist on Seinfeld.
It's crazy how all this stuff connects, huh?
I know. It's good. The world comes together in such nice ways, and also such horrible ways. So it all evens out in the end, really.
Who'd you prefer growing up, Bret Hart or Rick Martel?
I would say I preferred Bret growing up, but I learned to appreciate Rick Martel as I got older. And Bret is like, knowing him and being able to work with him on a couple of TV shows and a few wrestling shows, he's so, so funny, and no one really gets a chance to see it. His WCW promos are hilarious. He's obscenely talented, and I think he was too good of a wrestler in the sense that it obscured how funny he actually was.
It's funny you mention that, because one of my favorite interviews that he did was where he was talking about El Dandy.
Yes, I mean, it's amazing. And he did more. Like, if you look up, like, Bret Hart WCW promo, there's a lot of them that are, like, hilarious and weird. And I think he was in a good place where, like, he didn't give a shit, but, like, in the best way possible. And it made for some entertaining stuff. So, here's some more comedy for Bret.
Have you seen his match with Tom McGee yet?
Yes, I have. And I had heard about it for so long, and I heard him speak about it to me, and you're just like, you know, it was one of those insane things that you never had access to. All those matches you hear, that you just, you know, weird things that you'll never see on tape. And then it's fascinating. Tom McGee is fascinating. I also, like, I get why people say he's shit and whatever, and obviously he's not Luthez. But I don't see how he's any worse than Lex Luger or Ultimate Warrior, and like, what? Because he's athletic. Every flip he did, he landed clean. So I'm trying to figure out, I feel like there's more to that story where I go, you know, with a little work and a lot of protection, this guy could have still been very, very useful. He was fucking gorgeous. I was desperately attracted to him in that match. So I don't understand why he got such a weird raw deal. But hopefully one day we can figure it out. I'm just attracted to him, damn it.
When did you meet Bret Hart?
When did I meet him? We ended up doing, maybe the first time I met him was when we did that pilot. And then we ended up doing a couple indie shows together. I wrestled Harry Smith, and he would manage Harry. And then I would see him a lot when he came to Toronto, because he's friends with comedians at Comedy Bar. He did some comedy shows, so we'd all hang out that way. And he's a fine young man. And they're petitioning once again to get him on Canada's Walk of Fame, which I do not see why he's not on it, because, like, fucking Robert Goulet is on it. Like, shit. You can be a mediocre-ass singer and get on the Walk of Fame. It's right in the... If you haven't been, it's like on King Street, where all the theaters are, take a walk, and each sidewalk has, like, a star on it with a name that you've never heard of before. So, like, shit, put Brett's name. Please.
When you do acting, do you work better doing TV shows or movies?
I like going live. It's much easier. I get really neurotic about having to do multiple takes. Like, the ability to do multiple takes is, like, gives me too much choice and makes my head go crazy. I like doing just live, like, the coffee and underwear. If I could do a TV show that's, like, live, one take, and whatever we get is whatever we get, I'd be totally, totally happy with it. I'm more forgiving for it. For some reason, I don't like, of all the TV stuff, like, I've done and, like, pitched, I'm never that drawn to movies. I always like a world you can go back to, something that's familiar, like Sesame Street or Cheers. You know what I mean? It's something that feels real, something feels more real where you can watch it regularly, as opposed to, like, kind of that one and done feel. Although, obviously, there's great movies. Movies seem more serious for some reason, more intimidating, more legitimate. So I feel like TV is more, slightly more, on my idiotic level.
What Broadway play do you like the most?
Oh, wow. I was actually just talking about this. I'm probably going to say Phantom of the Opera. Phantom of the Opera is, like, the best. Well, I've seen Phantom 5 times. Phantom is amazing.
Since you brought up Phantom of the Opera, what'd you think of Michael Crawford?
Oh, the best. The best. I was just listening to Phantom songs on a recent road trip, and on, like, YouTube, you type it into YouTube, and they came up, the Phantom started singing, and I realized it was Gerard Butler from the movie, who just, like, yells through all the songs, which sucks. I like him, but he's no Phantom. Crawford was perfectly creepy, because in my mind, the Phantom has to be older and creepy, in addition to having a fucked up face. Because, like, if you're just a hot guy like Gerard Butler, keep the mask on, what's the big deal? I'll have sex with you anyway. But, like, the old, and especially, like, if you watch the Lon Chaney original, you know, black and white silent film, it's so creepy and so crazy, and I think Michael Crawford hit the perfect in-between between being Broadway romantic and being creepy, which is a really hard thing to do.
I grew up in Las Vegas, and one of the main shows on the Strip was EFX.
Yes.
And their big sell was Michael Crawford, the original Phantom of the Opera.
He's great. I liked him. Sarah Brightman was great as Christine. I mean, they're the first and usually always the best.
Now, unfortunately, I didn't actually go to his version of the show, but when David Cassidy took his place, my father went to go take me to EFX. I have fond memories of that show, and of course, nobody ever knows anything about it, unless you were there back in the day.
No, yeah, that's a deep cut. And there's so many of those shows where, like, now, you know, even stuff on stage will also be online, but back in the day, you only have that wonderful experience, so cherish it, and cherish seeing Cassidy live.
Could you see yourself as playing the Phantom of the Opera?
Yes. I can also see myself playing Raoul, or one of the new owners of the opera. I'm at a show. I'm also determined, to be tuned and ready at any time, to play the dentist in Little Shop of Horrors.
Now, you mentioned Rodrigo.
He is Gomez. He added so much. He was just like, you know, fuckable in every frame, I believe that's the terms. And he clearly had a habit of taking roles very seriously. And sadly, you know, he's a guy who his biggest hits came later in life because he died so young. I mean, it felt like, Street Fighter is a, you know, big movie. Obviously, the Addams Family were the two biggest. And then, unfortunately, he was dead, I guess, a few years after that. So it sucks, but it's nice to go back. Which is the other one? Gumball Rally? There's a racing movie. He plays an Italian, like, drag racer, which is also very nice. But he's very young.
When it comes to Rod Julia, a lot of people know him best as playing that role of Gomez, but I don't think he gets enough credit for Street Fighter. He had some great lines in that movie.
Oh, amazing lines. Just really, he makes that movie and makes you feel like, oh, this is a serious film, as opposed to some sort of CGI fuck around. And if they ever remake it, I don't know who could possibly truly be as good of an M. Bison as he.
I'm going to give you three choices, and I got to know what's in your heart.
Okay.
If you could be the headliner of a stage play.
Yeah.
Have your own Comedy Central special.
Uh-huh.
Or be the heavyweight champion of the professional wrestling world. What would you pick?
Oh, right. Can I have more information about the stage play? Is it like a one-man show? Am I on Broadway?
Broadway.
I'd probably go with that. Unless somehow being the world champion allowed me to also do a one-man show after my matches, I would have to go through, and I'd love to call it Why David Arquette Is Shitty, a one-man show. That's something I feel like I could perform, 8 shows a week, twice on Sundays. I'd have no problem with that. He would be far away from the building. Ideally, he wouldn't even be in New York. We'd pay him whatever royalties for using his name. Maybe we'll just send him a t-shirt and an 8x10 or something. But I think the theater world has really thrived because of his absence.
Now, you're a jack of all trades. You're a comedian. You're an actor. You're a professional wrestler. What's the end goal here?
I don't know what the end goal is. I mean, if you told me a year and a half ago that I'd be wrestling then teaming with David Arquette and hating every minute of it, I wouldn't even know that was possible. I also feel like sometimes there's such a clear path of, like, the wrestling dream of, like, gotta make it here, and that it's like, okay, I get it, it's cool, but also, like, so much stuff out there, and it's new and interesting and weird stuff, and I feel like I have a unique skill set and offering that will take me in more unusual places. So I guess my end goal would be to do more shit that I had not thought possible before.
Now, speaking of David Arquette, there was a time on TMZ where you bitch-slapped him on the red carpet. What was that about?
Well, I think it's very clear. It was the day before we were set to wrestle. It was on the red carpet of the premiere of a wrestling documentary called, I believe, 350 Days, the movie, which had a lot of Olga, had Brett in it. And who was there? The weirdest people were there. The cast of the original GLOW was there, which is amazing and ridiculous. Mackenzie Mitchell was there from Impact, and Taya. I'm remembering people there, and he was there taking pictures, and I gave him the old what for, as they say. And then the next thing you know, you're on TMZ, and I go, well, that's how that works. I also despise people who tell me that now that I'm on TMZ, I've made it. Like, I slapped a man. It has required zero skill. Please don't respect that. As nice as the publicity is, it's certainly not a marker of my talent.
Well, I bet somebody told you that you were going to slap the former WCW World Heavyweight Champion. You probably wouldn't have guessed.
No, I thought it was going to be Barry Windham. I thought we'd have lunch and he'd stiff me on the bill or something, and then I'd give him the what for. So I had no idea it would be Dave.
Oh, man. Oh, God. I'm losing my shit over here.
Brunch with Barry. It'd be a very contemptuous time.
It's too bad you won't be at StarCast. He's actually doing that.
I know. They tossed around a couple fun ideas of me doing hosting something at StarCast, but it fell through. So, it'll be nice. David's doing the Ric Flair roast. I'm sure I'll try to arm him with some insults, because I don't think he's the quickest with his mouth. And he's certainly a target. I mean, he'd be a great punchline. You know what I mean? So we'll see. That roast sounds crazy. I'm probably more excited to watch the Ric Flair roast than I am Double or Nothing. Because it's wrestling, you know? I want to hear people get insulted. That's what really makes the money for me.
You go to the locker room, you get ready, you put on your tights. You know, you have a big match ahead of you. You walk down the aisle, and there's all these people just being totally disrespectful to you for no reason.
Well, I know the reason. The reason is they're not ready for what I'm about to give them. They don't understand. And I can't fault them for their ignorance. I can shame them for it, but I don't really fault them. They, you know, sometimes you're so ahead of the curve that people don't see where you're going. And it's a testament to my unique talent as much as it is a proof of their idiocy and ignorance.
Do you have a dream opponent right now?
Oh, yes, Oliver Platt and Alfred Molina. That's what's top of my list. And I'd love to team with Stephen Weber. I think we'd be a good-looking pair.
So that would be your idea, a tag team match, if you could book it?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, nothing could be worse or weirder than wrestling and teaming with David. So I think I should be able to do whatever the hell I want now.
So you're in Seattle, you're drinking your coffee. What does RG City do?
I drink my coffee and do nothing else. You've described my entire weekend.
That's all. That's all there is to do for RJ City.
Yes, yeah. I'm a simple person. I have simple needs: good coffee, maybe a nice patio, or perhaps a pergola if you want to get really fancy. But other than that, who wants to do things? Nobody does things anymore. You know what I mean?
So on Twitter, you indicated that you might go to Old Wrestling Entertainment, you might go to Japan, you might go to All Elite, you might go back to Impact. Do you have a preference of the four?
No, I have a preference of the five. I really want to go to PBS. I think it's an organization that needs me and my skill. And I think with my vision and my ethic, we could easily make PBS at least the number two wrestling promotion in North America.
Who's your favorite Sesame Street character?
Oh my god, what a loaded question. Here's a deep cut. Vincent Twice is a Vincent Price parody theater. I would say probably him for now, although I'll change my mind in 3 minutes.
Do you like the Count?
I love the Count. I'm not hot on Elmo. Big fan of Grover and Super Grover. Kermit would show up and do Muppet Newsflash. Those are all amazing and great, and he should do more.
You know, it was a great PBS show back in the day.
What?
They would play that game with the giant map on the floor. Carmen Sandiego's over here, and the kid would grab the little light pole wherever it was, and they would go to some country I never heard of before.
It's hard to read a map as it is in your hand, let alone when you're standing on it. So, good, smart kids. That's what we need more on television, smart people.
But the real draw of the show for me there was Rockapella.
Oh, they're fantastic. And I looked them up, last month, just because it was stuck in my head. I was like, what are they up to? And I feel like they changed out a bunch of members, and it's, just one of the guys now. But I'm sure they still do a fantastic job.
Did you have any luck starting the PBS chant?
Yes, I did. Wrestling fans are weird. They like to play along, and they like to chant. And, you know, you've chanted every other promotion's initials. Why not PBS? So I continue to put it out there. I would like the fans to continue to chant PBS, and maybe we can pressure the organization to finally give me that big money PBS contract.
Is that why you also get up in the morning and you just think of the craziest stuff off the top of your head to tweet about?
It comes out of me. It's there. My mind is simply a vessel for the truth of the world.
Now, you've been blocked by world leaders. Have you blocked anybody?
Ooh, just a few people. think they were just using some poor language that I was not crazy about. But more often than not, I just mute people. I love tweeting stuff out, and then I get to, like, catfish based on the replies, who's idiotic enough for me to mute. So tweeting is very useful. It's just going to be me. I'm going to mute everybody on the platform, and it'll just be me tweeting into a void, hoping somebody likes it.
Which professional wrestler would you say is closest to your personality?
Oh, my. Which professional wrestler is closest to my personality? Easily, a dear friend of mine, Dalton Castle. We get along swimmingly. We definitely share one part of the brain. One part that is, I'm not quite sure. It's a very stupid part. Nevertheless, we seem to rent it out to each other.
And you'd rather have him as your tag team partner than David Arquette?
Yes, of course. Please. You know, I'd rather have a stray dog as my partner. And in many ways, I do.
And I think you and Dalton should get together and go to whichever promotion and try to become tag team champions of the world.
I think that would be great. Or we can just have brunch and live stream it. Either way, I think we're set.
Are you going to invite Barry Windham?
We'll see. If he wants to clean up his act and maybe foot some of the bill this time, he's ordering a cantaloupe, you know. It's not unlimited. It's not bottomless. It's a lot of money. It wasn't even cantaloupe season, so I don't know what his problem was. So if he can learn to be an adult at the brunch table, then I'll consider it.
What's your favorite Barry Windham match?
Oh, my God. He's had some doozies. I loved him in Too Cold Scorpio. I loved him in Bam Bam Bigelow. And, of course, his stuff with Flair was great. But I think my favorite match of his is the one that he's still fighting. Him versus brunch table etiquette. You're doing great. You're keeping things together.
What message would you like to give the fans?
That they enjoy wrestling. I think that's pretty clear. Same thing with, like, why I'm mad at people who like Tim Horton.
Where do you want to wrestle the most right now?
England. Especially since Spylot was airing on BBC for so long and allegedly did so well. I'd love to go and feel like I'm going to be very popular there and then have no one recognize me. I think that'll be a very humbling experience.
So you have yet to go to England?
No, it's on my list. I must go.
Maybe you can get together with David Arquette and take a little trip out there?
Yeah, that would be great. I'm sure English people will love his lack of any real skill.
You know what was a good British show?
What?
Pyro.
Oh, yes. I'm also a fan of Are You Being Served? Is probably my favorite British show.
What about Keeping Up Appearances?
Yes, she was fantastic. A wonderful Hyacinth Bouquet. She was a fucking tour de force. Even though it's like the same deal every single episode, she was still very good to watch.
Well, it's not the end of your career yet, but how do you want fans to remember you in the present?
I don't. I'd like them to forget me every day so I can continue to adjust my appearance and my performance, and they'll think I'm better than I actually am.
Do you have anything going on in Toronto right now?
I'm going to be at Greektown Wrestling June 23rd. I'll be defending my Greektown Cup, which burned in a fire, and I had to turn it into a sash. So people can see me there, certainly. And then I'm sure I'll be at Comedy Bar in the near future. June 15th, I'm doing House of Hardcore in Kingston, Ontario. What I'm doing there, I'm not really sure, but Brent will be there. So maybe I'll bother him. Maybe we'll have coffee and underwear. Who knows?
Have you been to Montreal?
Yes, I have. And it was just loud and very curt. It made me feel weird.
Is it as bad as the other Canadians say it is?
Yes, absolutely. Certainly. I completely agree. It's both worse and better than people say it is. Like a lot of life.
How will fans be able to find you on social media?
Well, they can just Google my name, and then they can follow what they like, and they can just block Civic Plug. I feel like we're all technologically sound enough now that they could at their own whim.
Well, I appreciate you doing this interview with me. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
No problem, and I feel like we've had enough familiarity now that I can nickname you Lawrence.
Oh, is that going to be the gimmick now?
Well, yeah, we're going to call you something else. Can't call you Larry. Everyone called you Larry. So I believe you, to me, you're Lawrence Francis.
All right, we will run with it.
Lovely.
Well, I will catch you down the road.
Yes, see and speak to you very soon. All
right, bye.
Bye.
I met my old lover on the street last night. She seemed so glad to see me, I just smiled. And we talked about some old times, and we drank ourselves some beers. Still crazy after all these years. Oh, still crazy. I'm not the kind of man who tends to socialize. I seem to lean on old familiar ways. And I ain't no fool for love songs that whisper in my ears. Still crazy. Still crazy.